Baseball fans, I'm Dan Grant at SlammingDannyG on Twitter, and with me as always is a modern day warrior with a mean, mean stride. His name's Russell Peddle at Rusty Peddle Bike on Twitter, and he's a pretty neat guy. And we, the Rapscast?
What?
Russell, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thanks for that long-winded intro where I thought like it was a race against time. I was curious if you were going to run out of breath and like pass out on me.
No, you know, I've got a pretty sizable set of lungs, so I can fire out some run-on sentences.
Good stuff.
But, you know, just in case the listeners thought they had wax in their ears or maybe they didn't hear that properly, yes, we have rebranded from We the Podcast to We the Rapscast. Kind of a multitude of reasons for that, but the biggest being, you know, we're not just appearing in podcast form anymore, and we really want to make sure to incorporate the word Raptors into our name so that people don't just think that we are another We the Podcast, because we found a couple others that exist.
Yeah, none Raptors related, but still, no. The fact remains that they're out there, and that's the reason why we, on Twitter, we are We the Raps Pod. And the reason for that is because We the Podcast already exists, and it's some form of political thing, grandstanding, but, you know, it's obviously a different vibe, but it's good to have our own name and, you know, go from there. So I'm really looking forward to it. I like putting the Raptors in the name there, and, you know, well, I think it's a good move. I'm happy about it.
Totally. And same amount of syllables. So we're not making people do any more work.
Exactly.
Sometime we'll talk about all the rejected names that we went through. We can maybe save that for the summer when we have time to kill.
That's a definite off-season podcast right there.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay.
Sorry, broadcast.
Broadcast, yes. Okay. So some adjustments will have to be made as we get used to it, but I think things will be fine. So without further ado, pretty big week for the Raptors this week. Leading up, you know, only one more game before the playoffs, and some things of significance happened this past week, Russell. So let's just dive right into Raptors past, present, and future. Before we get to the really big news of the week, we could talk about what probably would have been the big news of the week in any other week. And that was the ugly loss to the Pacers last, I think it was Monday? No, it's Tuesday. Last Tuesday, right after we recorded. And the whole Lance Stephenson incident. Russell, I'll just leave it at that because I'm sure the listeners know what we're talking about. Your thoughts?
I have such mixed feelings on this thing in general. I'm really generally against the unwritten rule aspect of sports. Mm-hmm. If it's a rule, write it down. And like all these things about respect and things like that, like, you know, to give it a bit of Canada-Toronto flavor, you know, this one of the most popular instances of this unwritten rule thing is the bat flip, Jose Bautista's famous bat flip in the Jays playoffs a couple of years ago.
Right.
And, you know, some people losing their minds about it, whereas, like, you know, fans are like, it's a kid's game and we're having fun, and I think that stuff should be part of it. And I kind of lean more to that side. Now, the difference in a bat flip in the heat of the moment, in a, you know, a passionate moment where you just turned your team's playoff hopes and 20 years of being out of things around, it's a bit different from, you know, scoring a basket when you're up like 15 points. Mm-hmm. And especially where someone like Lance Stephenson has a bit of a history of being, you know, a bit of a clown.
Yes.
So all that combined, you know, I took issue with it when I saw it. I was like, what is he doing? And because people don't do that. And when people do it, you know, it upsets other people. So it's one of those things where you can look at it and say like, well, what's the big deal? But then you know it's going to upset people. So why do it?
Sure.
Unless it's your goal to upset people. And I feel like that might have been the thing there. But then, of course, what came out of all this as well, as people referred back to, is there was a time last year when Norm Powell did this in a game against the Sixers. And there was no real reaction. But it's like if there's something in that in very recent past where the Raptors did this, it's hard to really stand behind them if they're taking exception to it. But I will say the one thing I was really excited about in all this, like whatever you think about when it comes to the unwritten rules and how you should react to them, I was really happy to see the team's identity boil to the surface and see guys like PJ Tucker and DeMar DeRozan, one of the team's stars, just get right up in Lance's face and say like, you know, the Raptors don't stand for that. Like at least to have an identity and to have convictions And to be on the same page with that idea, I think that was a positive.
Sure. I know what you're saying. I agree with you. There's a few things I wanted to touch in there that you mentioned. The whole unwritten rules thing. I understand some of them. I don't think you can throw them all under the same blanket, just personally, because there are some that are about not showing up your opponent. And there are some about, and that's the whole thing. Like the bat flip thing, people talk about that as showing up the opponent, but I don't really see how it does that. You're just celebrating your personal accomplishment. The same people who have a problem with the bat flip, probably, especially in Canada, cheer for ice hockey players that raise their arms above their head and jump up and down every time they score a goal.
Good point.
So it's just what's accepted in the sport, right? So, and the other thing, and that happened, I mean, not to talk too much about baseball, but when the whole bat flip debate was going on, they were talking about how that actually is a thing that's very cultural in the Caribbean, where when they play baseball, everyone flips their bats about everything. So it's not as big a deal. However, in the NBA, it's like pretty well understood that that's something that's going to piss people off. And you've seen people doing it more and more this year. There were some incidents of people taking three-pointers when they've been up. JaVale McGee took that three-pointer in that game just recently. And as you said, I'm mostly like, who cares? It's not like, and Lance, what he just went and did a layup, like, it's fine. And as you said, maybe it's him trying to be a shit disturber and bug people and get under their skin. I think it was one of his first games back with the Pacers, if not his first game back with the Pacers.
It was his first game back.
Yeah. So he's trying to help them and spark them, right? And I think that's why they brought him back, was to kind of give them that lift and give them that spark. And he had played decently well in the game. He seemed very happy to be back. So I can get why you'd have a lapse. But then to after the game, he's the one who posted the Norm Powell video on social media and started saying, well, look at the double standard, blah, 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 poor me. Well, like, Lance, you've been in the league, what, 7, 8 years now? Or maybe not that long, but like 5 or 6 years at least. When Norm Powell did that, he was a rookie, and he was immediately taken to task by the coach and by his teammates in the locker room. They talked about it after the game.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, so Lance, you're a veteran, and you know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen with PJ Tucker and guys like that on the court who don't stand for bullshit like that. And again, in the grand scheme of things, does it matter that he went and like, shot a layup? No. And the Raptors are probably pissed because they blew a huge lead in that game. But it comes to the whole point of not showing up your opponent. There's just no reason to do it. And, you know, the typical response is, well, if you don't like it, play better. If you don't like it, don't turn the ball over. And that stuff is fair.
Play defense on the possession, maybe.
Sure, exactly. And that stuff's fair. Like, I have no problem with that, really. But you also can't be upset. Like, he got upset about the reaction when he knew damn well what was going to happen. So that was the only part of it that really bothered me. Him shooting a layup, like, whatever. You're playing basketball. Play to the final whistle. I don't really care. But the fact that he, like, took umbrage with how they reacted as if it was some kind of a surprise to him was pretty stupid.
Yeah, I agree. But I think one of the things that comes from all this is the fact that, like, if the roles were reversed, how would they have reacted? You know, how would Lance Stevenson have reacted, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of like, it comes down to this happened a couple weeks ago against the Wizards were in a similar situation and they got mad because someone took a shot at the end. And
that was the JaVale McGee one I mentioned.
Right. Yeah, that's it. And that one was somewhat defensible because here's the thing. If you are concerned about people taking shots at the end because of because of stat padding or whatever like that, that's fine. But I think that if there's time left on the shot clock, like, it's one thing if the shot clock's off, then run it out, fine. If the shot clock's still on and you're going to get a turnover because of the 24-second clock and, you know, the time's going to stop and they're going to have to take the ball out of bounds, it makes just as much sense to me to just heave something up. And in that situation with JaVale McGee, if I'm remembering it correctly, there was time left. Like, the shot clock was expiring with time left on the clock. So to me, it makes sense to just chuck something up. And obviously, JaVale McGee firing a three isn't a, you know, let's get points type play, right? Like, it was very much okay, it's in my hands, I might as well chuck it up.
And even he, I think he said, he's like, I never get to shoot threes. I just wanted to shoot a three. Like, it's not, he meant no harm. And
yeah, exactly.
I've always thought, and someone had said, I heard, I think it was DeRozan maybe, who had said, in that situation, you're supposed to take the shot clock violation. I've actually probably never, maybe I've seen that before, but it's not something I normally when the shot clock is on, you can go take a shot. No one gives a crap. Like,
I've seen it a couple times. I think that it's like, But every time I see it, I'm like, just fire something up. Like, keep the clock going. If you're if you're winding down a game, why would you intentionally put it in a situation where it's going to get longer just because, you know, you're going to have to take the ball out of bounds and stuff like that. Like, just chuck something up. It's not a there's a difference between, like, you know, taking it to the hole and doing like a 360 dunk off the backboard or something and showboating versus just like chucking it at the rim.
Sure. So it's all degrees, all shades of gray with this stuff. But anyway, that would have been the highlight of the week, except the next day, something really, really important happened, which was, with very little notice, Kyle Lowry returned to the Raptors lineup. Now, we're going to talk, we're going to talk a little bit about that more coming up. But the important thing is that it keyed a three-game winning streak where the Raptors knocked off the Pistons in Detroit. They won against the Heat on Friday as well, and they knocked off the Knicks on Sunday in a noon start, which we, I think, talked about last week as might being a potential pitfall, a noon start in New York. But, you know, they look good. And let's just move right into Raptors present. Russell Lowry's back.
Yeah, that he is. Like, okay. The funny thing is I was on a work trip and got the news on my phone that Kyle Lowry is back. And I actually, like, said out loud, like, what the hell?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I did not expect him to be back, and I did not. It just came out of nowhere, and I was like, I was hoping he'd get back before the end of the season, but to get, you know, to get in a good four games before the playoffs is pretty ideal. And the best thing about it all is just the complete lack of rust.
Yeah, he looks fantastic.
He looks great. It's like the rest did him some good, you know? Like, he came out, and in his first game, he played nearly 42 minutes, put up one of his best lines of the season.
Yeah.
You know, shot over 50% from the field.
He carried the game.
He absolutely did. Like, he was, they're a big part of the reason why they won. And then, you know, you could say, like, okay, well, maybe he'll take the next one off. Like, I figured if he came back, maybe he would take one of the last few games off as well. Like, just space them out. But, like, I mean, he wasn't as strong in the Heat game, but he was good enough, and he was good again in the next game. So it's good because you get a chance to see him with Ibaka and Tucker. Cause that's the crazy thing about all this is that, you know, we hadn't seen him play any minutes with Ibaka or Tucker yet, despite the fact that now they felt like they were kind of ingrained into the fabric of the team, like with everything that's happened since the break. But that was all without Lowry. So now, like, that was definitely the big news this week, him coming back and looking really damn good.
Yeah. It was just wild. He came out and he's shooting threes, and I mean, he looks like he's a step rusty on defense, but that's totally to be expected. The fact that he was out, what, like 22 games, it looks like he was out for maybe a week or something. Like, it's not the same kind of rust you would have expected. He's completely in game shape. He's been shooting well. I saw a stat today on Twitter. He's shooting, I think he's 4 of 10 on pull-up threes. So that'll work.
That'll do.
That's just such a big element that the team's been missing. You know, with Ross gone, Ibaka, obviously, and Tucker are able to hit open threes. Patterson's able to hit open threes, but they're not three-point. I mean, they've been really good, but they're not, like, you don't think them as, like, dead-eye three-point shooters.
Yeah, it's another shooter. It's someone else to spread the floor, and that's really what the team needs. And, I mean, you have, now all of a sudden, you've got a lot of really good pieces. You've got a lot of good ball handlers. You've got a lot of good shooters. You've got a lot of good defenders. You've got some post-up players if you need that. You've got some good pick-and-roll players. Mm-hmm. You've got some catch-and-shoot, some pick-and-pop. Like, everything is there in one way, shape, or form, and each position is 2 to 3 deep. And I don't know, like, you see this team, and then all of a sudden you think, wow, like, the weaknesses of the Celtics, Wizards, and even the Cavaliers, you look at them and you're like, Raptors might be a pretty interesting team come playoff time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's pretty cool to see when you saw in that Miami game, they went with a really tight rotation. I think maybe against Detroit, they weren't totally sure what they were going to get from Lowry. And then obviously he came in like nothing had happened. But I think what you saw in the Miami game is a really good window into how they might run the rotation come playoff time.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really, like you said, it was tightened up. There was 8 deep, basically. Wright and Poeltl got in for like some minutes there at the end. But the
it was only because of foul trouble too.
Exactly. Yeah, but at the end of the day, you've got your starting five of DeRozan, Lowry, Ibaka, Valanciunas, and Carroll, and then off the bench, Tucker, Joseph, and Patterson. And I mean, That's really solid. I mean, if you need another look, you've got Wright and Pirtle to, mm-hmm. to use. But overall, I think that's a, you know, you talk about teams, playoff teams being 8-9 deep. You don't want to have anyone more than that, really. And mm-hmm. I will go to war with that 8.
Yeah, that's a fantastic 8 for sure. And the fact that I think it's really nice that Wright and Pirtle know each other so well. So for the two of them getting that first kind of playoff experience, if they do get thrown into the fire, if there's a situation where there's an injury or foul trouble or whatever, it's nice that they have that familiarity with each other.
Absolutely.
You can kind of, having that at the end of the bench is just such a luxury. Yeah, I mean, Norm Powell has kind of gone by the wayside with now that Lowry's back. I guess we talked a little bit about how Lowry coming back, who would be the man who would lose the minutes. I think we thought it would be DeLon Wright, but... Fred VanVleet was, I think, the first one we said, but Powell, it looks like, is going to be kind of the odd man out unless something happens, an odd situation.
Yeah. I mean, break in case of emergency,
yeah.
Carroll gets hurt or something like that. He's good insurance for that. Yeah. But at the same time, it's not like you're going to, if you want an 8-man rotation, you're not going to take him over any of those 8 guys.
No, for sure. And actually, that's a really good point because, Carroll has not exactly been an Iron Man in his time with the Raptors. So, if he did go out, I think you'd probably see Tucker move into the starting lineup and Powell maybe take those backup minutes. But, I mean, Tucker's playing the majority of the minutes anyway, and he's earned it, but based on the way he's played since he's been in Toronto. So, you don't feel bad for him, but, it just is what it is at this point.
Hey, listen, he was a second round pick last year and he's proven that he belongs on this team and belongs in the rotation.
Yep.
But, you know, expectations are still like, he didn't all of a sudden become an all-star. He became a very good rotation player and mm-hmm. he's on a team where there are a lot of those guys. So at the end of the day, when you get to the playoffs, if you're going to have guys that are, you know, have a bit more, it's going to be a bit more on the veteran shoulders. So he's still got a lot to learn and he was an asset in last year's playoffs, but there were a lot of games where he completely wasn't used at all. Yep. Like it was the same type of thing. It's like break in case of emergency. He had some really mm-hmm. big plays, but he also had games that he barely played at all. So I think mm-hmm. that'll be a similar thing this year. And I don't think that there's any fault in that, any problem with that. He's still, you know, young, under team control, part of the future plans of the team. Uh-huh. Still a reason why the team could trade Ross and get a guy like Ibaka.
Totally. But, yeah, they had no idea if they were going to get Tucker when that happened, right? So
no, and that's it. And I mean, it's one of those things like when you have a playoff team and then all of a sudden you think like, well, if so-and-so gets hurt, we're screwed. And you don't really feel that about anyone on the Raptors. I think, funny enough, maybe the person I feel the most that way about is DeRozan at this point because he creates a lot of opportunities for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And because we've seen that even without Lowry, the team can be successful. And I still consider him the most valuable player on the team and all the stats back that up. But at the end of the day, like they're so deep at point guard. So if, you know, something happens to a Corey Joseph or Damari Carroll or whatever, or even like a Jonas Valanciunas, and you've got like DeLon Wright, Norm Powell and Jakob Poeltl just waiting in the wings to fill spots. Like I'd be comfortable with that. I'm not all of a sudden going to see an injury and go like, okay, we're boned.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Nice use of boned. surprised me. Made me laugh. I think, the two on that ranking are DeRozan and Ibaka. And obviously Lowry, like, if you're looking at the ceiling of the team. But just given what they provide the team and the depth of those spots, those are the two guys you really need going on all cylinders the whole time in the playoffs. So speaking of the playoffs, you know, it's really great to have Lowry back, that he's gotten so much run before the playoffs. Let's move into Raptors' future, and we'll talk about how they have one game remaining, and we're recording this on Monday night. It's 10 after 9 Eastern right now. There are some games going on that could really affect whether this game on Wednesday means anything for Toronto or for their opponents. But it's looking, Russell, like Toronto is probably going to be playing the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, it's looking very likely. Like, you can look at the scenarios, the tiebreakers and things like that, but that's looking like the most likely outcome. When the games end tonight, like, by the time someone's listening to this, it'll be even clearer. But, a lot of things have to break a certain way for that to change.
If Atlanta wins a game, I think that's it. I think there's no, I think, because to have the tiebreakers work, Atlanta would have to lose both games. Milwaukee would have to win both games.
The thing that could happen too is the Pacers could win both,
right?
And the Bucks could lose both.
Okay.
Or the Heat could win both, and the Bucks could lose both because the Heat hold the tiebreaker over the Bucks.
Oh yeah, see, Milwaukee has tiebreakers with everybody except for, I guess, the Heat. So there you go.
Yeah, they're only two games back. So, you know, the Hawks, Bucks, Pacers, and Heat. Luckily, the Bulls aren't in play because they don't hold the tiebreaker against the Bucks.
No, with anybody. So they can't. And yeah, I think the Bulls' tiebreakers are pretty useless. So I think they're going to be in seventh or eighth.
Yeah, if they make it at all.
So yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So you're looking at the Hawks, Bucks, Pacers, or Heat, with the most likely being the Bucks. Yeah. So we can pretty much move forward with that. Like we'll do something. We'll try to anyway do something a little bit preview-y once we know what the actual team is. At the very least, we'll be upping our exposure over these next few weeks. Of course, as the playoffs gets going, we'll check in more regularly than once a week. Maybe with a few shorter shows here and there that you'll be able to find in all kinds of places on almightyballer.com and so forth. I think that we can kind of look, if we're going to look at Raptors future, we can look ahead to this game on Wednesday and what it could mean. And then I think we can move forward talking about the Bucks as a potential opponent. And if that gets completely screwed, we'll come back and fix what we said.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fine. So what do you think about this Cleveland game? Do you think it's going to matter?
I think it matters for the Raptors just because regardless of what happens, they're locked into third. So seeding wise, it doesn't matter, but you know, Casey has said that they're going to play it like a regular game because, I mean, they've only had Lowry back for three games. These players are still getting used to each other, knowing where people like their shots, where they like to catch the ball. I think it would be a disservice to the team to not take advantage of every opportunity. Like, obviously, you're risking injury. You want to rest players, things like that. But I think you want to really figure out what your rotation is because there aren't many teams going into playoffs that are, you know, don't have more than three games experience with their top guys.
That's fair.
So I think it would be a bad move to not just play this next game. And I mean, the Cavs are still playing for first. So it's going to matter to them most likely.
Yeah.
So I think that's it's an important game too, because I mean, the funny thing about it is if it comes down to like the Cavs getting first or second, it's like, if you beat them, then you have a better chance of facing them in the second round, but you can't play that way either. Right? Like you can't look past your opponents like that. Like you can't look past the first round like that. We've gotten bitten doing that before.
Yes.
So I don't know. It's interesting. It's going to be, it has the potential to be a very interesting game.
Yeah. I think also, I mean, you said Toronto's locked into third. If Boston loses a game, they're playing the Bucks that night. If Boston loses both their games and Toronto wins, cannot Toronto not jump past Boston?
Yes, that's right. You're right.
Because Toronto has the tiebreaker.
Yeah, I was taking that for granted because I don't expect the Celtics to lose both those games. Who are they facing?
They are playing the Nets right now. They're up 15. So.
Well, yeah, there we go. Yeah. That's pretty much going to seal it right there. It's just, you know, poor one out for the Atlantic Division banner, I suppose.
Yeah. The Hornets are up on the Bucks at halftime. So that Milwaukee losing too and us not having to play their red hot asses is alive, but we'll see what happens. You're right. That's very unlikely for that to happen. And the Atlantic Division banner will fly south of the border for the first time in a little while. I think the game against Cleveland, like you said, I think those rotations are the most important thing for Toronto, just to get the reps in, because I know maybe you can give DeRozan or Ibaka a few less minutes just if they need that kind of maintenance. But they're going to have 2 or 3 days off before the playoffs anyway. And for Toronto to get that time together to play well together. And I don't know, you said if it matters to Cleveland, they could have their big dudes out there. I think based on everything we've seen from Cleveland since the All-Star break, I don't imagine. I mean, they're sitting everybody tonight. Their big three are all sitting tonight in their game against Miami, which they're somehow still winning, as I look at it right here. So who knows if the game's going to mean anything to them, but it's a valuable tune-up for the team because, like you said, Lowry's been out for such a long time that every second he can get with those guys is a second you don't have to worry about that in the first round of the playoffs. And as I just said, the team they're going to be likely facing, the Milwaukee Bucks, is, you know, one of the hottest teams in basketball right now. So you can't really afford to be finding your footing when you're playing a team that's firing on all cylinders like that.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. So, Russell, what do you think of the Bucks? Any opinions, thoughts, feelings?
The Bucks feel like they're an entertaining team, and I think it'll be fun to watch a series against them.
Yep.
I think that perhaps I don't know if this is wrong. Like, here's the thing. There was a time when the Raptors going into the playoffs, I had no confidence.
Yes.
And yeah. I still don't really have a crazy amount of confidence, but I really don't feel like there's a, you know, even when we talked about how hot the Heat were and all this stuff, like I've never really looked at any of this and felt like we have to worry about the Raptors against any of these teams. And I look at the Bucks, and as much as, you know, they've been fairly good since the All-Star break.
Yep.
But I mean, you know, they've lost three of their last four. They're down to the Hornets as we're recording. You know, they've played well at certain points, but at the end of the day, they're still a 500 team, right?
Yep.
Barely over that. And Giannis is great and all. But you know, they've got some inexperience on their roster. And I think that all of a sudden the Raptors having gone on a deep playoff run last year and being, you know, even with the losses to the Wizards and the Nets, like going to a 7-game series with the Nets and, you know, feeling being swept by the Wizards and all that stuff, like that's still invaluable experience. And I think at the end of the day, they're a stronger team with a much better chance of winning that. So I'm not really afraid of the Bucks, to be honest.
That's fair. I have a healthy respect for them. They did go 14-4 in March. So they had a pretty good month there. Like you said, though, since then they've gone 1-3 in April so far, and they could lose tonight. Giannis can't shoot. So, I mean, obviously he's dynamic enough a player that he creates anyway, and it was just a matter of playing off him, that's what every team would do. But I think when you play a team in a 7-game series, those kind of really huge flaws start to become more exposed. And given the perimeter defenders the Raptors have, they can throw at him. You know, Damari Carroll, they can throw Tucker at him, they can throw Ibaka at him, they can throw Patrick Patterson at him. All those dudes who are so able to switch and are so athletic, I think that's a really kind of nice counterbalance. I think Chris Middleton has been the big difference for the Bucks since he came back. He came back earlier than I think anyone was expecting after he tore his quad.
Absolutely.
Or was his hamstring? I can't remember what it was. But
hamstring.
Awful, awful leg injury where I think most people expected he'd miss the season. And he's been fantastic for them. You're seeing all these little think pieces dribbling out about, and this happened last year too. He became a critical darling about how he's just better than what people realize. He's like, you know, one of the most underrated players in the NBA, best player's never been an all-star, all that kind of stuff is sneaking up. I can see that snowballing for him in the next year or so because he is fantastic. And he's so big. I think people underrate how big he is. He weighs almost 240 pounds and he plays the two. So he could give DeRozan some problems, but then that's fine. Like, who guards Kyle Lowry on the Bucks? Like Malcolm Brogdon? He's a rookie. He's a great player. I like him, but I think ultimately the Bucks will find that they're overmatched.
Yeah, I mean, they have a 19-year-old starting at center. Like, I love Thon Maker and all, but
yeah.
McCurr, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, outside of Antetokounmpo and Middleton, there's not a lot there that scares me, whereas the Raptors have Lowry and DeRozan and then a whole slew of really good role players. So,
yeah,
it shouldn't be that difficult of a matchup. And everything they have, like if they want to throw out a Greg Monroe and see what he can do, we've got a counter to that with Valanciunas if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not a lot of, I don't know, there's not a lot to be worried about there.
No, and like for given how versatile Antetokounmpo is, he could probably play all five positions on the court. They don't really have other guys who are able to do that. They're pretty like dialed into their, I mean, he handles the ball on the wing, but they don't really change their lineups around too much. Monroe's been decent off the bench for them, but they just don't really have that kind of, they can't give you a lot of different looks.
No, I mean, absolutely. They're an interesting team and all, but I think that, you know, I look at that and the Raptors don't make anything easy on themselves. I'm sure they'll have a couple games where they go down 10 or whatever and have to rally back, or it might go to 6 when it should be 5 or something like that. But there's not a lot I'm worried about there. Like you said, when your best player is now, funny enough, this is the pot calling the kettle black. But when one of your best players doesn't have any range, that tends to be limiting. But then again, one of our other best players has lots of range. So
yes, that's true. We have two. They only have one.
Yeah, so. Unless we, yeah, I mean Middleton does. Maybe I'm
again. He is, yeah, Middleton can shoot threes. Yeah, but.
Like they match up at that level again, but then beyond that, I mean, you look down the list of players, like if you're going Henson in the middle, or if you're going McCurr in the middle, and you're relying on guys like Tony Snell or whatever to hit three-pointers, then, or Dellavedova, then what are you doing?
Goddamn Dellavedova.
I know. That guy's going to start something. There's going to be some moment where, like, P.J. Tucker's up in his face or something about something.
I was going to say, P.J. Tucker's just going to turn him into dust. Yeah. Just crush him. Anyway, he's the guy you'd love if he's on your team, but he's the good guy you hate to play against. So now we have one of those guys in Tucker, which is really nice.
Which is beautiful,
Yeah, for sure. So I think we both are not even cautiously optimistic. I'll just say optimistic with a healthy respect for, you know, how good Giannis is and what he's going to be. But he's still so young. I think their best days are ahead of them. The fact that they lost Jabari Parker, too. If they had him, maybe, you know, they have that stretch four element and it gives them a bit more versatility, but they don't really have that. So I think it'll be a good first round series, but I was kind of like, I almost did my Grant rant about it today. I was just like, everything was conspiring, because for a while it looked like the Raptors were going to play the Heat when they were so red hot, and then you know, that kind of fell off, and then I was like, oh, we're going to miss the Heat. Great, we're going to get to play the Hawks, who stink, and then the Hawks have stunk so badly that they, you know, haven't been able to stay in the right spot to play the Raptors, and just nothing was really working out to get, you know, the Raptors an easy first round opponent for once. And, you know, of the four bottom four, I think the Bucks are the team you'd least want to play, but it's the NBA playoffs. I kind of came to that realization that you're going to have a team that has a really good player. Like, if you look at all those teams, you know,
yeah, of course.
If it was Chicago, they got Jimmy Butler. If it's Indiana, they got Paul George. There's always going to be that matchup. There's not a team that's in the playoffs, I don't think, that doesn't have someone who scares you in some way. The league has so much parity now and has so many good players. Like, every team that's half decent has a guy that, you know, puts a little bit of fear into you anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we're going to move on then from Raptors past, present, and future. I think we're feeling pretty good about that. And we are going to get into some listener questions. From the feedback I got from the guys who asked the questions last week, people really like this segment. So we are going to try to do it every week and get some listener questions in, because I think it can spark some really good debates. The first question that I have here is from Jeff McLeod, and he's a guy who lives in Toronto that I used to play pickup basketball with. And yes, I am stalling for time as I get the question up. okay. Oh, cool. I have a couple here. Now that I went back to where it was, and there's a couple more posted. So, Jeff McLeod's question is, if the Cavaliers don't make it out of the Eastern Conference, if their struggles are real and either the Wizards, Boston, or Toronto, make the finals, is there any scenario you can see where a team from the East realistically actually wins the title?
Nope.
Nope? Straight no?
Straight no.
What team from the West would have to be in there for you to think that they would have a shot? Because obviously not the Warriors. If the Warriors
anyone other than the Warriors, I think there was at least a chance of it. Like, obviously the Spurs are still crazy good, but they're, like, you look at the Warriors and they just seem like they're an unrealistic team. Like, someone turned off trade blocking, like you override trades in NBA 2K or something. It's just a team that doesn't seem like it can fairly be put together like that. But although we know it was, I don't see a scenario where anyone other than the Cavs could beat them. And I'd even think, like, not the Cavs, if I hadn't seen them come back from 3-1 down last year, like, to the point where I can't question LeBron's will to win. but anyone else I don't see taking them. But I mean, put anyone else there against, you know, a Celtics, Wizards or Raptors, it would probably be a series. I'd still probably pick the West team, and I'd say most people would, and they'd be the odds on favorite. I think at the end of the day, if you look at, you know, any power rankings in general, the top three teams in the West are before any team in the East, pretty much universally. Yeah. So that's the Warriors, Spurs, and Rockets. And, you know, the Rockets obviously are a team, you know, after what we've seen happen to them against the Clippers a few years back and stuff like that, I think that they're a team that you think would be beatable. But I guess the Spurs or the Warriors get to the finals against any of those non-Cleveland teams, and you'd have to think that they'd be pretty heavy favorites too.
Yep, I agree with that. So let's, yeah, I mean, we could go through it team by team, but I don't think that's really necessary.
It'd be deer in the headlights anyway. You put any of those three teams in the finals against an experienced finals team like the Spurs. I know that there's been turnover in the roster, but there's still like Ginobili and Kawhi and Parker and guys that have been there before. If it's the Pop. Spurs, Pop, yeah, and even to go with the Rockets, like Harden's played in the finals and things like that. You put the Raptors there or the Celtics that haven't won a series as this team, or the Wizards that, you know, were out of the playoffs last year. You put any of those guys in the finals and it's like, I wouldn't necessarily pick them.
No, for sure. Like the Rockets would be, I think the Rockets would be a terrible matchup for Toronto just with how fast they are and how defensive that Toronto has played lately. I think a lot of the big losses they've had this year have come in games where they get too trigger happy, kind of shootouts.
Yeah,
I don't think that's their game as of now, and good luck trying to slow that team down. I think for any team in the East to realistically have a shot, you'd have to somehow see like the Clippers make the finals.
Yeah,
and I don't think that's in the cards this year.
No, I don't think so either. So I mean, to answer that question, I don't think there's, you know, this sounds bad from a Raptors analyst / fan. I don't necessarily want anyone other than Cleveland there, because I don't feel like anyone really makes it a series for the Warriors other than Cleveland.
Yeah, it's fair. It's a fair point. Just Cleveland when they're at their best, and it's just LeBron. It's really LeBron. When LeBron's at his best, if Irving and Glove are both healthy, what they can do to teams like the Warriors and what they can do to a team like the Spurs, the way their offense works when it's firing on all cylinders is just a different... It's the best, like, half of a game, you know what I mean? If you consider offense and defense halves, that's the best weapon that any team in the East possesses, but offense or defense.
Precisely.
When their offense is going. So that's really what can happen. All right. So let's see here. Let's move on to a second question. As I bring that up, because I am switching between social media things here. Oh, this is a fun one. This was from one of your friends, Russell, I believe, last week. And once again, I am stalling as I find the question. from John Barry in Newfoundland.
Yeah. Thank you so much, by the way, for pronouncing Newfoundland correctly as someone who's not from there.
I don't even know. It's just how I say it.
You nailed it. And a lot of people say Newfoundland. I can't even fake my way into it, but some kind of approximation of that where it always like makes me cringe. Very few people. Newfoundland, which is what it is.
Yeah, Newfoundland. Yeah, that's what I've always said. I don't know. I know people. I've also heard people say Newfoundland.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one I hate. There it is.
That's the worst one.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's not even a word. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Newfoundland. Anyway. Let's see. He wants to know. Will Ibaka in the playoffs this year provide the same spark that Bismack Biyombo did for the team last year?
Oh yeah, all that and more. I think that, and I think he and Tucker will kind of share that load. You know what I mean? There's something that Biyombo brought to the game in giving a crap. You know, that factor was very high. So you have that from Tucker, and when it comes to like defensive presence, obviously Biyombo is kind of in the Ibaka mold, really, except Ibaka can also give you that punch and that kind of motivation on the offensive end too, right? Because he has range, he can hit timely threes and stuff like that. I think it's a very underrated part of his game, because you just, for whatever reason, you don't expect the shot blocker to be a good solid three-point shooter, but he really has become that in his career. He's a real threat from long range and above the break on top of it. Like,
yes,
that's where he's comfortable. He's a very unique player in that sense. So I think that there are going to be a lot of opportunities for timely threes and timely blocks. And I think he's really going to, you know, if anything, Biombo is a very poor man's Ibaka. So whatever, yeah, whatever we got from Ibaka, we'll get in spades, and from, or what we got from Biombo, we'll get from Ibaka. And of course, if we're talking like, you know, finger wags per 48 minutes, I think we'll get just as many from Ibaka.
Totally. And that's, I think Biombo was just, his play was so infectious. You know, he's really young. I think people forget how young he is. I think he was 23 when he was playing in the playoffs for the Raptors last year, 24 at the oldest. And for him to, you know, he'd never been in the playoffs. He'd been stuck in the damn Bobcats for his whole career. Yeah. So he was having a great time. And that whole thing in the Miami series where he had the block shot followed by the alley-oop, yeah, was just the best. And it was just, it was Dan Reynolds of Raps HQ wrote a really great thing for it, for the site. If you guys can Google that and find it, it's a great read. And it was just the most fun that you've ever really had as a Raptors fan. Like, it was, for me, like, encapsulated to a squish, like, moment. You were just like, usually in Raptors history, and we're going to talk more about this later, you get a great moment followed by an even greater disappointment.
Yeah.
And this was an amazing moment followed by an even more amazing moment where you thought the whole house was going to fall down. And it was really, really cool. So I understand what John from Newfoundland is saying with the, in respect to the spark, which you really, really want. And Ibaka, it's funny, teams that have him for a while, you start to see that he does, he's not a perfect player. He's a little trigger happy. He likes to take those mid-range jumpers. I can almost predict when he's going to shoot now. He likes to do that little jab step, and yeah, then he pretty much always shoots after, which is fine because he shoots well enough that it's okay. But you can see how that would get frustrating if he has a game. He's even had a couple games lately where he hasn't shot very well, and he just continues to shoot the ball. But you saw in the Pistons game, it's actually, I think that's a good thing. When he is not afraid, he doesn't get gun-shy. He's always going to take the next shot, which is what shooters need to do. He doesn't hesitate. And I love Patrick Patterson. Sometimes you see that with him. When he's not shooting well from three, he double clutches, or he'll drive to the basket, or he'll pass up a shot. And that's not what you need him to do. You need him to shoot it, because then they have to defend it, whether it's going in or not.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah, Ibaka was, I think he was 0 of 5 or 0 of 6 from 3 in that game against Detroit. And at the end, he drilled a huge one. So the fact that he has that confidence in himself, and the fact that he's able to do that, is its own kind of spark. It's not, you know, as in your face as what maybe what Biombo would do with the finger wagging and things like that, but it's a really kind of a cool second layer to the Raptors that I don't think the Raptors teams have ever had.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the funny thing is, if you look back at that Biombo moment, and what was so huge about it is the improbability of him catching the pass.
Yeah.
Like, it's sad to say it, but like, that's one of the things about that play, was that it seemed in a sense it was unlikely, whereas Ibaka getting a big block and then running the floor and catching it for a dunk or nailing a three is going, doesn't seem as impossible, if that makes
yes.
sense.
Yes. I know exactly what you mean.
But the big, I think we're going to get a big playoff moment out of PJ Tucker. I feel like he's got big playoff moment written all over him. This is his first trip to the playoffs, eh?
Which is wild.
And
I mean, he was gone for a while, but it's still pretty crazy.
Yeah, and I have a feeling he'll come in and he'll be a major spark. And at those really tough moments, late games, he's going to do some stuff, and he's going to, you know, pump his fists and yell and get people going. So I'm excited about that, because that's one thing, you know, you lose a player. Like, I remember in the offseason being really sad about the loss of Biombo and being like, oh, I wish we could have pulled off getting him back as well as DeRozan. And I knew it didn't really work money wise, and I didn't really want to pay him as much as Orlando did. But at the same time, you fall in love with those players, and there are a lot of those players on this team now. So it's one of those things where it speaks to the management of the team that you can lose such a beloved player and then just find some more.
Yeah, I agree. I remember when I heard about just the same as you said, when you heard about when Lowry was coming back, I kind of knew Biombo was probably going to go, and I thought it was going to be for an insane amount of money. I went through this Raptors HQ last year. Daniel Hackett and I did a Raptors sliding door, as we called it, where we talked about free agency and just the different scenarios. You know, bring Biombo back, bring DeRozan? Obviously, DeRozan was the bigger question at the time. Can you bring them both back? Should you bring neither of them back? What would your options be? And I think we settled on the most likely scenario being what happened, DeRozan staying and Biombo going.
That would be interesting to have a similar thing this year, because this year
it's already in the works, Russell.
All right. Well, let's also bring it on this show. We'll get Hackett on here and do a little recap of it.
I've already talked to him about that, actually, and he's very, very interested. He's down.
Fabulous. So,
and Hackett knows the salary cap like few others.
Like, he could literally, he hasn't applied for one, but I feel like he could have a job on a team as a cap expert. And he's a smart dude. He's good with numbers too. I really like that guy.
Yeah.
One of the few Raptor people in the Raptors blogging community that I've actually met in person as someone who's outside the Toronto area. I went for supper with him once. Nice guy.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, all right. So last question then. Let's move on. This is one I got last week. It's kind of, you know what? We're going to ask it because it's funny because my Grant rant is kind of against the whole idea behind this question. But it's still worth asking right now. So Francois Neville, who is a friend of mine from a basketball group that I belong to on Facebook, had a two-part question. He said, if you consider the Raptors a championship contender right now, and I think we both do, I think they're in that group, how much longer is the championship window open for this particular core of players? So I think for the sake of this question, we'll say Lowry, DeRozan, Ibaka. And then what, if anything, can be done to extend it? Now, he did go on. I don't want to read the whole thing, but he said, assuming those guys are back beyond this season, we don't need to get into the nitty-gritty of that right now, but just assuming that you can bring those three guys, obviously DeRozan's locked up, but the other two guys back, how long do you think the window would be realistically, and what would they need to do to extend it further?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. Holy crap.
Yeah.
You know what? This team is built very interestingly because there are, like, Lowry and Tucker are on the wrong side of 30, but they're the only two. Yeah. Carroll, I guess, is as well. But, you know, there are a lot of young players. Like, Valanciunas is still young. DeRozan is still in his prime years. Ibaka right now is in his prime years. Corey Joseph is young. Patterson's still in his prime. If you can bring everyone back, like, and lock them up to a couple of years, you still have at least a couple more seasons you'd have to think, right?
Like, yeah.
Then Lowry's going to hit a point, because point guards, especially that play as rough as he plays, you know, he's going to get, a four-year deal from the team. I don't expect the last 2 years to be excellent by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't see why he couldn't do it for another 2 years, because he's also peaking later than most point guards, so there might be something to that. Like, it's hard to apply the rules that we're used to applying to him.
He played so little at the beginning of his career that I think...
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have as many miles on his tires as another guy that you might compare him to. So, yeah. I don't know. I'd say, you know, this window, and whatever kind of window we want to call it, it's obviously not a championship window, but a good playoff team, a top seed in the East window, I'd say another 2 years is fair. Maybe beyond that, it might get a bit iffy, but it really depends. It's so much of it depends on what they pull off this summer with those four crucial free agents, right?
Yeah. And that's, it's so much of it. I think if you want to talk about extending the window, and you're right, I think everything you said is fair about, you know, 2 years, if you can get everyone back at the numbers you want, you can bring back who you need, and, you know, you have a similar kind of similarly effective team, because, you know, this Raptors season has kind of been a tale of two teams. It'd be interesting to see how they perform as a unit together for the whole year. I think we saw when they made the Kings trade, the team, you know, played really, really well and then went into their first playoffs and it didn't go so well. The team the next year was better, but then there were some obvious flaws that kind of hadn't emerged the year before. So you never really know how a team is going to perform, unfortunately, until you get them together for kind of a training camp and a whole season. But I think in terms of extending the window, that's the hardest part to do. And that's why you see teams don't do it. Like, the Spurs are an aberration. Even the Grizzlies, who have been so good for now for like 6, 7, 8 years. Maybe they've fallen off a bit this year, but, you know, they were right there kind of in the same area where Toronto is for a bunch of years. You're seeing the Clippers are starting to hit year 6 and 7, and that's starting to fall apart. That's like as long as it can be. So if you see this as year 2 or 3 already of that window, another 2 years is a pretty reasonable amount of time. I think beyond that, it's just hard to predict because you don't know what's going to happen with your future draft picks. You don't know if you're going to, you know, luck into a guy like a Jimmy Butler, who was the 30th pick in the draft, or a Rudy Gobert, who's a late pick in the draft, or if you're going to miss on those players entirely and have to change the course of your franchise. And you just don't know.
That's a fantastic point. It is hard to predict. But one thing I will say that is good for the, to at least hope that it can happen. Like, I think that being in a better position than even, say, a team like the Clippers, who could really, go a completely different direction this summer. The Raptors, as I mentioned before, I just think the youth on the team and the fact that I think it means something that, you know, let's say we lose one of the guys. Okay. Yeah. Like there's 3 to come back, and all of a sudden you lose a Tucker and you're like, okay, well, you know, Powell's going to step up and maybe play more minutes, or you lose a Lowry and then you're like, okay, well, that would be horrible, but there are, you know, we just figured out that the team is 3 point guards deep beyond Lowry. Mm-hmm. You lose Ibaka and you're like, okay, then you're kind of back to square one on the power forward. I think that would actually be a bigger loss than we're ready to admit.
Yes.
But like either he or Patterson leaves, and then all of a sudden you're really stuck at that position.
Well, I think that's honestly what we can get into. I think that's the most likely to happen. I don't think you're going to be able to bring both of them back, but we can talk about that another time.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll talk about that a lot this summer, I'm sure, as well. Because right now I just really want to enjoy the fact that they're both there.
Yes.
Because we've been waiting years for that to happen, and now that it's finally there, it feels like we're on borrowed time. But anyway, to my point, I think there are players that can step up if you lose one guy here and there. So 1 year you lose this guy, or you trade that guy, and then all of a sudden there's a young guy that's getting a little bit better that can step up into his place, you know? So the way the team is built, I think that there's the opportunity for it to extend if you can, you know, handle your contracts right. You kind of, everything just breaks okay with trades and things like that. There's definitely a chance to sustain it because, I don't know, it's been a really great run. This is the 4th straight year that the team has made the playoffs, and that's the first time in franchise history that has happened. And the fact that you look at the team next year and the likelihood that they'll sign at least, like, you know, a few of those guys, they should be right back in that position again next year, depending on what kind of summer they have.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree. Yeah, and like if you look at the Eastern Conference too, I mean, Boston I think is going to change in some way. I don't know what's going to happen there, but they have to choose a road at some point, and they're either going to be a young rebuilding and probably still a very dangerous team, or a team that flips their assets and becomes a real power if they can make the trade that you think they might want to make. So
yeah, it's really hard it's hard to be both, and they're kind of straddling that right now. Like you look at the fact that they have a potential all NBA point guard, and they're about to have like a top pick in a draft that has 2 like franchise point guards. So there's gotta be, something's gotta give there. We don't know what it'll be.
But if you look into the future too, like if you say 2 years, like what are the Sixers going to be in 2 years? Who knows? What are the Knicks going to be in 2 years? Well, Melo probably won't be there. Who knows? There's just so many, 2 years in the NBA is an eternity. Like we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, 2 years ago, the Raptors team that we ran off that game where they played against Boston, and the starters for the team were like, it was like Amir Johnson and Tyler Hansborough. And like, if you remember those years, that feels like it's 10 years ago.
It really does.
Yeah. So much of that can change. So I think the window, I think we've answered a couple times, is realistically 2 years, you hope for 3. Beyond that, it's tough to predict. Like, but there's, like you said, there's those real positives. We see the positive things. We see that, you know, the draft picks, they've already been doing a really, really good job of picking up valuable players late in the draft, which is a humongous bonus because there's so many busts in the teens and in the 20s. The fact that they've gotten DeLon Wright, the fact that they got gifted Jakob Poeltl for Andrea Bargnani, the fact that, you know, they've got Norm and they've hit on all these kind of later guys, even Fred VanVleet being a useful player. It's really cool, and you feel more confident about them being able to extend that window with having, you know, Masai Ujiri and Jeff Weltman in place.
All excellent points.
Okay. All right, Russell, it is time for this week's Grant Rant, so I'm going to have to ask you, as always, to pipe down.
10-4, good buddy.
Okay. A theme here, and it's kind of this, you know, transitions nicely from what we were just talking about. A theme here on the Rapscast is to enjoy the moment. So this week's Grant Rant is a plea to the newer Raptors fans to soak up every single second of what's happening with this team right now. Invariably, in the social media-dominated, content-driven world in which sports fans exist these days, questions of larger pictures arise. If you follow the NBA at all, you'll have seen MVP conversations that began January 1st, have heard again and again about how Cleveland and the Warriors are destined to meet for the third time in the finals, and accepted certain potentially shaky realities as foregone conclusions. Raptors fans in particular can be found talking as much about whether the team will be able to retain Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka as much as who Toronto might actually play in the first or second round. They're debating whether or not Kyle Lowry played enough games to be considered for All-NBA, and whether or not DeMar DeRozan has a shot at the second team. I'm guilty of it too. We all are. But as of now, the time for that is over. After Toronto caps the season with a game against Cleveland on Wednesday, it's time to live in the moment. This marks the fourth straight season that the Raptors have appeared in the playoffs, which means that in 22 seasons, they've made it a grand total of 9 times. Last season, in their 8th trip, marked just their 2nd and 3rd playoff series wins. It feels like this team is old hat at this now, and especially to new fans, but really, it isn't. Take a journey back with me. Remember how gut-wrenching the playoffs were last season? Remember Kyle and DeMar's struggles versus Paul George and the Pacers? Remember Solomon Hill's almost three-pointer? Remember George Hill becoming a supervillain? Remember Hassan Whiteside and Jonas Valanciunas battling until they both fell? Remember Kyle's three-pointer from half-court or DeMar's shoestring around his thumb? Remember being 2-2 with Cleveland and dreaming of making the finals? If you're anything like me, you'll remember feeling exhilarated and sick to your stomach at the same time. I'm not trying to drench up the bad memories, just the opposite. Remember all of those things because we're about to embark on a totally new journey, create a new set of memories. And for years, Raptors fans didn't have that opportunity. So before Game 1 this weekend, go back and watch the old videos. Bathe in the feeling of excitement and fortify yourself against the coming storm. Don't worry about the summer or awards. They're fun debates, but they're essentially meaningless. This is why we watch. This is what we live for as fans, what we dream of. You're living in the golden era of Raptors fandom. Don't blink or you might miss it. That's this week's Grant Rant.
Dude, that was beautiful. I nearly shed a tear there, I got to say.
Oh,
nice. It really got me in the feels, as the kids say. No, for real, that was really well put. And I think you're absolutely right. I think it's really important to not worry every game about, you know, what's happening this summer or you know, evaluating what came in the past or what, you know, in the season, what this season meant and what next season will mean. And even to look at like the window, as you said, it's a funny transition after what we were just talking about, but
yeah,
you know, to really just focus on the playoffs. And of course this show will, undoubtedly be very playoff centric, very soon.
Sure.
But it's really something. It is really something. This is being a fan of this team for all 22 years. Very rarely do you have this. We've talked about it. I've never felt this kind of confidence where I can look past a first round opponent. And I know I'm not supposed to do that, but in reality, I know the team is that good. This is a team that's top 8 in both offense and defense, and they're deep at every position. And now you're starting to see people write power rankings things where the Raptors are a top 4 team, like a top and even the top Eastern team in a lot of cases. Like above the Cavs, above the Celtics, above the Wizards. You listen to podcasts by like the big guys like Bill Simmons talking about how like Toronto is a real team to fear. Now maybe he's reverse jinxing them, I don't know.
Who knows?
But yeah. the point is, you know, has this team ever been more respected than they are right now?
No.
They haven't.
The answer is a flat no, yeah.
No, because even when like Vince was dropping 50 in the playoffs and having a shot at putting the team in the Eastern Conference Finals. Well, this team has actually been to the Eastern Conference Finals. And as much as people will look at the past couple of years and, you know, point to their meltdowns against Brooklyn and Washington, like that's in the past now. And this is a team that got to the Eastern Conference Finals last year and now has a much better roster. And, you know, the stats bear it out. And you know, they've gotten they have their 50 wins for the second consecutive year for the first time in franchise history. They did that while dealing with a lot of injuries. They were without Lowry for like a quarter of the season. DeRozan missed time. Patterson missed time. You know, they had to incorporate two new players mid season and they still got to 50 wins. And regardless of what happens this offseason and what's happened before and all that, like, right now is our time. Like, you know, get Jurassic Park up and bumping and,
yep,
you know, show the national TV audience once again what we're made of and how much we, like, you know, the fans care about this team and how vibrant basketball can be in Canada. Because I take that really seriously, and it really means a lot to me as a fan all my life in a country where basketball wasn't necessarily ever number one.
Sure.
To see last season when it mattered, like, it was national news when the Raptors won a playoff game. Like, when did we ever see that? Never. So it's a big deal. And I'm just excited to be a part of it and to watch it all happen and to have the opportunity to talk about it on here. So I really love that. That was one of my favorite Grant rants, period.
Great. Thank you. And I think it's cool too. Like, even for fans that have been around since the beginning, people remember back to those Vince years and they remember them fondly. But, like, and we've said this before, none of those teams ever won 50 games. None of those teams, I mean, I guess the year when, you know, he hit back Graham against Philly, people thought that one of Philly or Toronto probably would have won the next series, I believe, against the Bucks.
Yeah.
And then maybe they could have gone to the finals. But we were talking about how deep this Toronto team is now. Like, who was the second best player on that team? They were nowhere near as good as either Kyle Lowry or DeMar DeRozan.
No,
who was the third best player on that team? It was nowhere near as good as Serge Ibaka. The team was fun and it was cool because Vince was so popular and was just, you know, at the height of his star power. But they were never a real title contender.
No, exactly. You can what if all you want. It was not like a team that was as well, like, and we have fond memories of that team, like you said, but it's
sure
not as built as well as this one. So, you know, at the end of the day, this is the best time to be a Raptors fan right now.
The golden era.
Right now. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the other thing too. It's not like the end is in sight. Those Raptors years before, they made it 3 years in a row then. And there was like a definite like peak, and that was the peak that we just talked about, that second when they made the second round. But then you saw it already falling off the next year. Again, and there was the 2 years when Bosch made it within those first round exits. There was a definite, they were a surprise team the first year when they kind of came out of nowhere to win the division. And then the next year they were supposed to be a bit better and kind of blew the first round series. But it was against Dwight and the Magic, like, who I think went to the finals that year. So, or maybe they went to the finals the next year, but it was that same kind of era for that Magic team. There was no expectation of it happening again the next year. It was always like, wow, this is great. It's a big surprise. Like, if the Raptors didn't make the playoffs next year, that's going to be like a huge shock. So the fact that they've entered this kind of an era of a sustained success is just such a treat for people that have watched it from the beginning, like you and myself.
Yep, well put.
Okay. All right, well, Grant ran over for this week. And now it's time for us to get into the weekly segment we call Dinos and Digits.
Very nice. Thank you very much. Now, it's the end of the season, and this feels like a time when we should be reflecting back on big data sets and you know, numbers for the full season as a whole, and maybe even like comparing the post All-Star break and trade to pre All-Star break. But like you said in the last segment, this is a team that there were two versions of this team basically. And really now that we're into the third era of this particular season, because we're combining the two now that Lowry is actually combined with Ibaka and Tucker. So, you know, instead of looking back at the season as a whole, I'm actually interested in looking at the last three games and just kind of looking a little bit at the rotations and what we've seen. Now, everything that we talk about in the next couple of minutes will come with the large caveat of the fact that, you know, this is a small sample size. We're talking about three games. Some of these lineups we're going to discuss played maybe 5 minutes, which is really not enough time to make any kind of definitive conclusion about. That said,
that's all we got.
That's all we got. So,
yeah.
and good, very good point. And I think it'd be fun to look over the season as a whole if our season were ending right now. Like, if the Raptors weren't a playoff team, we could look back on things. But as of right now, being that they are going into the playoffs, I think it's important to look at you know, as we said, there are three games that, that this team has played at full strength, and what the playoff team is going to be, what the roster is going to be. We're looking at it right now for the first time. So I really want to look at these three games and see what trends have emerged. So I think that the interesting thing, first of all, if you're looking at five-man lineup data, okay. I think it's interesting that the Raptors are 3-0 in their last three games. Their most used lineup, by almost double of what the second most used one, is of course their starting lineup, which, as we know, is Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Damari Carroll, Serge Ibaka, and Jonas Valanciunas.
Okay.
That lineup in its 40 minutes has a really putrid net rating of -25.2.
Oof.
So that comes from a really bad offensive rating of 81.2 and a not very good defensive rating of 106.4. So that's not cutting it. And it's only three games and whatever. But of course, as we've been talking about now the last few weeks, the team hasn't been getting out to good starts, and the starting lineup hasn't been as good as it could be.
No, and in those three games, awful starts against Detroit and the Knicks.
Yeah, and against teams you don't want to give up awful starts to. So once it becomes playoff time and every game really matters and you don't want to give up games, I think you want to put your best foot forward first. So this comes back to the debate once again of should the team be starting Carroll or Tucker. Now, I know that Carroll shouldn't be the whipping boy in all this. He's not the problem. He's not Carroll, I still think he provides a lot for this team. And yes, he's been a bit injury plagued since he became a Raptor, but this isn't a referendum on who Damari Carroll is as a player. I think that he's a good player, just that Tucker is giving the team so much. And you look at all the data since he's joined the team, and everything just points to, more Tucker means, better basketball and more wins. Yep. So, it's again, this is 5 minutes worth of lineup data, so it really doesn't count. But uh-huh. 5 minutes that we've seen of Tucker on the floor with that lineup instead of Carroll, they have a net rating of 84.1, which is just silly, which will of course normalize. But then you even look at what's another really good lineup. If you put Tucker in place of Valanciunas, now that lineup still has Carroll. But in their 5 minutes, they have a net rating of 105.3.
Wow.
Or you look at, the good old Lowry plus the bench unit. Oh, my God. Don't you love that unit? Back again. It can be any bench players, basically, in Kyle Lowry. And for whatever reason, they just destroy second units. Because, again, I guess because Kyle Lowry is so important. But the new bench unit, now, of course, that Ross is gone and things have changed around a bit. Kyle Lowry, Corey Joseph, because, of course, that pairing works really well. Patterson, Pirtle, and Tucker has a net rating in 11 minutes of 55.3. So the common denominator in those three lineups that I mentioned that just have ridiculous net ratings and ridiculous stats is really Tucker and Lowry.
Yeah. And, given their skill sets, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I think what this all comes down to is you want to maximize the minutes that those two play together. And, of course you throw in DeRozan and Ibaka and guys like that too. But the whole point is, the Lowry and Tucker combination has played 63 minutes together. And that's big enough to actually look at and think about. Yeah. And that two-man combo has a net rating of 23.8.
Yeah. And that's great. Like, it's a really good number. And as you said, it's a big enough sample size that's something that's not fake.
Exactly. So why would you not take the first 8 minutes of the game being that way, right? Like the whole...
I know. It's odd.
The concept, well, it matters who finishes the game and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's like, well, why let yourself get down? Like I love the fact that the Raptors are lead the league in double-digit comebacks this season, but it doesn't have to be that way.
No, they did it last year, too, because they used to start Luis Scola. I think they had 15 double-digit comebacks last year, led the league. They're... double-digit comeback over the Knicks on Sunday for a win was their 21st. 21 times, 21 of their wins, they've had to come from 10 down. It's not good. It's not a sustainable way to do things.
No, exactly. And, yeah. I mean, you look at any of the combos, honestly, and obviously some of the Valanciunas ones have... we could be looking at Valanciunas as the source of the problem here. I just don't think that there's a logical replacement for him. Like, I don't think your rotations are going to work if all of a sudden you're starting Patterson and... and Ibaka at the same time, or if you're starting, like, you know, to remove Valanciunas from the starting lineup doesn't work as easily as, say, switching out Tucker, and just Tucker seems to be in all the right combinations. And you look at the even the three-man combo of Lowry, Tucker, and Ibaka. Now, keep in mind, these guys have only played three games together, but in their 28 minutes of action on the floor at the same time, they have a net rating of 49.7. So again, I'll say that everything we've talked about in the last few minutes, as numbery as it has been, they all point to it's good that Lowry is working well with these new guys, and
yep.
and it's really pointing to the fact that, you know, more Tucker is a good thing. So any way to make that possible, I know that he's playing like a reasonable amount of minutes. You know, over those three games, he did play 27.4 minutes, which of course is fourth on the team. So he's playing like starter minutes anyway.
Yeah.
But if you, you know, it seems so simple to me. And I mean, it's easy for me to sit behind a computer and look at some numbers and say it, but it seems so silly that the team gets down so hard in first quarters. And it just seems like there's a way around that. And it really is Tucker. So this wasn't meant to be a Dinos and Digit segment where we all of a sudden talk about the Tucker versus Carroll thing again. I just thought it was interesting to look at the lineups and, you know, the trend that's really emerges is that Lowry and Tucker are a good pairing.
Yeah, it's pertinent, man. I mean, we talked about it last time, but nothing's changed. They still haven't made the change in the lineup. So, we'll have to see. They didn't do it last year until the playoffs. So,
Patterson, you mean?
Yeah, with Patterson and Scola, right? When I say they didn't do it, it refers to the big obvious lineup change that everyone was screaming at them to make.
Thing that you could see happening here, sorry to cut you off, the thing you could see happening here is that, like, you know, almost predictably, and I think some people have talked about this, we talked about it last week, and people have made this joke online, I want to say Reynolds,
he did.
Daniel Reynolds made it, and I think that William Liu from Raptors Republic, The Score, has also said it, but talking about the fact that, you know, you could almost, it'd be great if you could bet on the fact that, you know, some idea where the Bucks win, or whoever it is, playing the Raptors in the first round, they win the first game, and then all of a sudden you see that lineup change in game two.
Yeah, and then, it's probably that exact lineup change. So, yeah, man. Well, that was a fantastic Dinos and Digits segment.
Thank you.
I think that it's good to see that Lowry is gelling so well with those guys, because I think him coming back, that was the... not a worry, but it was a question I had from pretty much everyone I reached out to for questions last week, was how do you think Lowry is going to mix in? And obviously we talked about, you know, what a big hunk of minutes he's going to play, and he didn't have any kind of a minutes restriction in that first game. So the fact that he's fitting in well with the team and, you know, there hasn't been a steep learning curve is good. I remember watching that first game and just watching him talk to people. He didn't really do too much in terms of being really vocal. And then the next game against the Heat, he really let Ibaka have it a couple times. And not anything that needs to be talked about. It was obviously just rotational stuff. And, you know, Kyle likes to tell people where they need to be on the floor, and which is his job as the leader of the defense.
Well, that's it. I mean, he's a leader, and he just got back. He's playing with this guy for the first time. Like, why mince words? Why take your time, like, feeling like you have to pussyfoot around things? Like,
yep.
I think that's fine. I like seeing that kind of fire, and I don't think that all of a sudden you're going to hear something like, yeah, Ibaka and Lowry don't get along, so they're not going to re-sign both of them. Like, that's not going to be a problem.
No, it's anyone who plays basketball on a team, you know, there's always a guy who's the kind of the lead dog, and kind of, I was never that person. So I always appreciated being told what that person wanted me to do.
Yeah.
If it was something that was effective. Right. And I think that was even on offense too. It wasn't just on defense. There was a two possession sequence where, both times Ibaka was trying to post, both times they're trying to get him the ball, and both times there was turnovers. And you could see Ibaka was frustrated, but you could see Lowry got right up into him and said, basically, not physically or anything, but just said, like, that's your fault. Because both times he didn't really get good post position, or one time he did, but he let the guy kind of front him. And the turnovers resulted because of that. It wasn't because they were bad passes or anything like that. And it's just basketball plays. But it was really good to see that kind of a communication between the two of them, because that's the kind of stuff that, you know, obviously we said Milwaukee isn't as good as Toronto, but Milwaukee's played together for 3 months and they're playing well. So that's the kind of stuff you want to iron out now.
I think absolutely, and I'd like to see that on my team. Like I think you get, you know, the teams that have this kind of like unspoken tension thing, like what was going on with the Indiana Pacers a few years ago, bringing this all full circle to Lance Stephenson again. But you know, that's where you saw them fall apart. Whereas the Raptors, like, I love the fact that PJ Tucker, like in his first game as a Raptor, basically called out DeRozan for not playing defense. And that kind of thing will trickle down. And now the fact that, you know, Lowry's getting in Ibaka's face over, and rightfully so, over what happened. So at the end of the day, it's if those guys are all communicating, that can only be good. I mean, that's why your team jumped up to be like the eighth most efficient defense in the league, which is not something we would have ever imagined would have happened to this team. And it's because they're communicating and they're calling each other out, and they're you know, people are taking responsibility for stuff. And, you know, that goes both ways. You can't expect guys to take responsibility for stuff if you're not also going to speak up and tell them when they're not doing it, or when you don't do it, like I don't want to say taking credit, but like taking responsibility for things. So like Ibaka, unless Ibaka can deny, you know, what he was being told wasn't the right thing, then that should all be fine. And at the end of the day, I mean, he did play with Westbrook for many years.
Yeah.
It's not like he can't, it's not like he can't handle a strong personality or someone yelling at him, you know?
Yeah, no, it's true. And it's fine. As you said, the communication is good. So that stuff is really, really important, I think. And it's actually a positive. So if anyone who's seeing that and thinking that that was a sign of dissent, I think it's a real positive, as you said, heading into the playoffs. Russell, I just realized we had a late question from Sean Woodley of Raptors HQ.
Oh, yeah. Check that out.
Yeah, I completely forgot about it. So Sean, sorry, we asked you for this, and he wants to know what is your, and it's kind of what we were talking about a little bit, but I think he means it more in a joking way. What would be your ideal starting five for Wednesday's game against Cleveland?
I think that, last regular season game, I want to see the regular rotation, and I want the regular rotation in the playoffs, as we just said, to be Tucker in at the three. So, quite honestly, you could have a discussion about like where Valanciunas fits in, but I don't mind Valanciunas playing early in games, and he does bring a spark when he does play. And like, he's been a monster in third quarters lately and stuff like that. So that matters. So I will definitely say that I would love to see the combination of Lowry, DeRozan, Tucker, Ibaka, and Valanciunas. Cause I think that's this team's best shot at the beginning of a game, because, you know, at the end of the day, the game will dictate if you have to go small or if you have to go with, you know, more Patterson, or you need to like play Carroll and Tucker together. There are so many versatile players on this team. That's what I really love, like combo bigs and combo wings and things like that. So there are all kinds of combinations. But the beauty of going with that lineup, you've got a bit of everything. Like if you can get Valanciunas going early and he's dominating the other team's big man, then that's good. And if you've got the defensive intensity of like Tucker and Ibaka together, then that's good. Like I think that's really the team's ideal five to start a game. To finish a game, I agree that Valanciunas isn't always the right choice there. But to start a game, that's the five I want. So like going back to what we said earlier, I think that you need to keep your rotations going into the playoffs, and you need to keep figuring them out. So I think that Wednesday night, regardless of the situation, the fact that the Raptors can't move up or down, you know, assuming that, again, as we're recording this, the Celtics haven't won yet. But if they do, then obviously Raptors will be locked into third with no chance to move anywhere else. So it would make sense to rest guys, but I don't want them to. So I want them to really go into the playoffs with momentum. So come Wednesday night, I'd like to see them put those five out there, beat the Cavs, just to kind of send a message.
Because
if the Cavs are playing for seeding and the Raptors can play spoilers there, like, you know, that gives the team a bit more confidence going into the playoffs if the two should meet in the second or third round.
Yeah, Toronto hasn't beaten the Cavs this year either. And I mean, we beat them a bunch of times last year, so that didn't really matter. But it is nice to get a win over who you think your ultimate final opponent will be.
Yeah, because that can get into your head.
Yeah. As for my ideal starting five, I'd go with, Fred VanVleet, Bruno Caboclo, DeLon Wright, Bebe Noguera, and Jakob Poeltl, and play them all 48 minutes. ideally, of course, might be a little out of left field. No, obviously, I think what you said is correct, that you want to get those rotations in and
This comes up every playoffs in every sport. I'm sorry to cut you off, but this always comes up, the rest versus rust thing. And when you're locked into a playoff series, like, is it better to play your guys and do your regular thing so that, you know, you're that first playoff game, you're ready to go? Or is it better to get them the rest and make sure they're fresh? And I see so many teams stumble after resting that I never like that idea. I mean, I don't like risking my guys and their health either, but at the same time, I'm always very hesitant to say, like, okay, you should sit down now. Cause I mean, they played on Sunday, and then if the team rested their main guys on Wednesday, that would be almost a week between games. And these guys are in a rhythm to play more often than that. So I think that you come out then and then there's a problem. So.
Yeah. And I think the Lowry injury has actually taken that question away from Toronto this year. Cause I think it's inherently more, but it's pretty obviously more valuable to get Lowry reps with the new guys.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If he had been playing the last 15 games or even 20 games, even 10 games, perhaps it would be like, I rest him. But
yeah, and leading the league in minutes, like he is, right, minutes per game or whatever, right? Then you give him the rest, give him the day off. But as it is, I think we're going to see them trot out their full force. So I wonder what Cleveland will do. I guess it depends if it matters to them. So.
Yeah,
we can't really answer that question right now. So I think we'll finish things off by going with this day in Raptors history. I actually found a really nice one that kind of bookends what we've been talking about. Raptors' first season, 1995-96. This point in the season, April 9th, which is the day we're recording, the Toronto Raptors were 20-56, and they were playing the Milwaukee Bucks, who were 23-52. So Battle of the Titans. The Raptors pulled out a 6-point victory and only used 7 players in the game, which I thought was kind of astonishing.
Playoff rotation.
They got to get ready. Damon Stoudemire did not play in the game. I guess he was probably hurt or something. Starting five was A.C. Earl, Doug Christie, Alvin Robertson, Tracy Murray, Oliver Miller, with Jimmy King and Dan O'Sullivan coming off the bench. Which I've never even heard of Dan O'Sullivan.
No.
So he only played 19 minutes and he had an offensive rating of 25. So tough game for Dan. The starting five, the lowest minutes played in the starting five for the Raptors was 34 for A.C. Earl. Then Doug Christie had 38. Murray, Robertson, and Miller all played 42 minutes. Sorry, Murray played 44 minutes. And just a meaningless, worthless end of the season game between these teams. So you can see how much the rest versus rust thing has changed. I mean, obviously these guys weren't resting for anything, but a pretty wild looking box score.
Yeah, I just brought it up. I mean it's funny because, like, talking about facing the Bucks and how far, like, this team has come since then, 20-56. Like, I don't know. I hope they luck into some kind of fast rebuild when it comes time to tear this down. Cause it really makes me shudder to think about watching a team play all 82 games that has that record.
Yeah.
Like I remember it vividly, but I'm not ready to go back there. Not yet. And no, I'm not ready to go back to, like, you know, having to rely on guys like A.C. Earl and Oliver Miller and whoever the hell Dan O'Sullivan is.
Yeah, fucking sorry, Dan O'Sullivan. I was not expecting to read that name. I was like, maybe it'll be, I don't know, Zontabac or something. But Dan O'Sullivan was unexpected.
He played 5 games for the Raptors in total in his career and started 2 of them. So he was closing out the season that year. And you know, being that I was 12 years old and had basic cable, I guess I didn't watch those games very closely because that name did not strike me as someone that's ever played on the Raptors, let alone. You know, played, how many minutes did you say he played? 19?
19, yeah. Not insignificant.
No, but anyway, that's a good, that's a perfect this day in Raptors history because, like you said, it bookends things. It's
totally.
That was a first season, and we've been there since then, and we've seen a lot of crappy games like that with crappy players. No offense, Dan O'Sullivan. If you're listening to this.
Not intended. It's just, if he is listening to this somewhere, whoever he is in the world. Alvin Robertson, hell of a game. 6 steals. 25 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, 6 steals.
Wow.
That's a nice game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's going to do it for this week, Russ. So why don't you tell the people where they can find us?
All right. Well, we are currently, as we said, going through a rebranding process. So
yes,
I'm going to give these out, and they might not be the same by next week. Right. They're kind of old school right now, so you'll have to bear with us while we go through this change. But we're still in our infancy, so hopefully we're not screwing up our, you know, thousands and thousands of listeners by trying to get this all straight. We're still feeling things out here, even though we're on episode 8. But I do like, by the way, there was a moment earlier where you dropped something here on the Rapscast. I'm like, that shortens really well. I like that, because we can just be, you know, when in purposes like that, can just be referred to as the Rapscast.
As opposed to the podcast, people might not know what we're talking about.
Yeah, that doesn't really narrow it down very much.
No, yeah.
But we'll have to check. Maybe there is already a Rapscast, and apologies if there is.
No,
okay. Okay, well, we'll check anyway. But so anyway, these handles will change, but you know, you're listening to this during a week when they probably still function. So where the people can find us, all that is to say, on Twitter at WeTheRapsPod, on Facebook.com/WeTheRapsPod, and we accept emails for now at WeTheRapsPod@gmail.com. And as soon as we finish recording this, I'm going to try and track down all the WeTheRapsCast stuff and try to claim them. And hopefully, they'll be there.
Yeah, so if you do follow us on Twitter at those places, look there, because we'll have, if anything does change this upcoming week, we will we'll update it on those, you know, already existing accounts. So,
well, yeah, you can find us and follow us there, because they'll change on their own. The only thing that you'll have to maybe then, the email address would be something that wouldn't forward to the same spot or something like that.
But
we'll figure it out.
We'll get it to you. So if you do also, something that did happen, any of our subscribers who are listening on iTunes or Podcast Addict, we had a problem with our feed. And if you subscribed at the beginning, some of those lovely reviews that you left for us are no longer there, unfortunately. So if you wouldn't mind taking the time to go and, redo the lovely review, or, you know, leave some biting criticism, whatever you want, we're open to either. If you could do that for us, it really, really does help, and we really appreciate it. So We The Rapscast is hopefully the new permanent handle, and we'll get all that stuff sorted out shortly.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a very good point. Sorry about the mix up on the where you can find us. We've had a couple technical difficulties, but hopefully now that's all behind us, and we'll get a good lather going with the new name and the new way of doing things. So really excited. Good episode, man.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Onwards and upwards. So I am Dan Grant at Slammy Danny G on Twitter.
And I am Russell Pedal at Rusty Pedal Bike on Twitter.
Get out the salami and cheese, mama, because this podcast is over. Whoa, 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 whoa.